Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. Over the course of 2024, I tracked every movie and TV show I watched as it's time for Tilly's 2024 Trans Rep in Media Part 1, Movies. Let's talk the good, the bad, and the oh god, not again. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the bird song in my morning, Susan Bridges.
That is definitely not accurate.
In my morning, I said, not everyone else's. Our returning guest is Jesse Earle, a writer, journalist, and filmmaker known to over 250,000 YouTube subscribers as Jesse Gender, where she breaks down science fiction, pop culture, and politics through a queer and trans lens. Jesse's work has appeared on GameSpot, Microsoft, Out Magazine, The Advocate, Pride.com, Inverse, and Skybound Entertainment. She also recently wrote, directed, and released her film Identities, a queer cyberpunkish thriller starring John DeLancey, Abigail Thorne, and Jessica Nicole on the streaming service Nebula. She hopes to continue the story of Identities as she is currently pitching it as a TV series. Welcome back, Jesse.
Yay! Excited to be here to talk about hopefully somewhat more positive stuff
we'll
on this episode.
We'll see.
Well, some positive stuff, some bad stuff.
Yeah.
But it'll hopefully be a bit more of a bit more mixed bag than the very negative one we talked about last time.
Yes. Okay, so you are probably most well known for your YouTube video deep dives on media and trans topics. And so I wanted to ask you, what made you decide to get into making videos? And where do you find the time? Because shooting and editing video takes forever.
I don't sleep is the problem.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. That does help. The question is, I don't know how I find the time to answer that. But how I got into it, weirdly enough, I worked at The Advocate out. It was a company called Pride Media, but they had The Advocate, Pride.com, and Out Magazine.
Okay.
And I was working there as part of the video editorial team. And I was, you know, I kept pitching articles that they really liked and things like that. So I was writing a whole bunch and I was filming a whole bunch for them. But it was all filtered through that lens.
Sure.
Of like queer media news stuff. And like, I obviously care a lot about that. Hence why I'm here and talking.
Yeah,
about it.
Same.
But it wasn't what I got into like film for. Like my passion for film wasn't like queer stuff. It was like nerdy stuff and science fiction.
Yeah.
So I wanted to find my voice. Like I was like, I feel like I'm improving as a writer and creator, but I'm not finding my voice. I'm finding The Advocate's voice as a creator.
Yeah, right.
And so I wanted to start figuring out who I was. So I set myself a goal of I was going to release a video every single week. And that back then they weren't like these big, long, deep dives.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah. They're not like the like 2-hour videos I do a deep diving into topic that I do today. They were just more like, you know, one off like, oh, let me talk about Star Trek for 10 minutes or like whatever for 10 minutes. And then that started getting the ball rolling. And it was just a way to sort of find my own voice, find what I was trying to say. And as I went on, like, obviously, my perspective as a trans person on those things was fairly unique within the YouTube space. Like there were nerdy people clearly in YouTube and there were like, you know, queer and trans creators in YouTube, especially at that time. But there wasn't really that anyone at that intersection. And of course you both know that like science fiction and fantasy and sort of genre stuff is like a crucial place for so many queer and trans to find ourselves. So that's just kind of where I ended up finding more and more inspiration and more what I wanted to write about because it was expressing me through the things that I loved. So yeah, that's kind of the short version of how I got into it.
That's really cool. Is it hard though? Because I feel like everyone always says, don't read the comments, right? But YouTube is like the ninth pit of hell for internet comments.
It's had weird ups and downs because I actually find like YouTube has like generally been a decent space.
Really?
It started off. Here's the thing. transphobes, whenever they comment on your videos, they have like five things they say.
Oh yeah,
you're not really a woman, or
it's
like
the same that, as like, the social media drive-bys that you would get like on Twitter.
Exactly, yeah. It's like five things, and so you filter those out, and also you become, it's much as it sucks to say, like you kind of become hardened to that sort of stuff. So like I could filter it out, and I actually feel like there's been like a really thoughtful, engaged community on YouTube. Like it's, you have to like balance it, because like it can also get to your head too, of like,
sure,
every like when people will nitpick everything, and
of
it's
course.
As any artist does, like you can, yeah, you have to like pay some attention to people reacting to stuff. You make stuff for people to react to it, but you can't get too caught in it, because you just sort of end up overly criticizing yourself or getting overly caught in it freezes you up.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of stuff. Currently, I mean, just the culture that we're in, and like every sort of online platform, like YouTube, you know, everywhere, it's become very hyperbolic, and everything has to be sort of delineated along lines of like us versus them, and
yeah,
these culture war topics as trans people are sort of at a crux of. So like recently, within the past year, it has gotten a lot worse, which has kind of been depressing,
yeah,
in multiple different ways. But like that doesn't mean that there isn't still good there. There isn't still good happening there. It isn't stuff that I don't like there. It's just, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just part and parcel with the culture that we're in, and that's something that I like. That's not unique to YouTube, frankly, and sadly.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's maybe not worse than anywhere else, if just as bad. So
yeah, yeah, it's. I would say it's just as bad. Like YouTube has its own particular issues that it accelerates. I did a video on that actually recently. So like YouTube is not immune to all of this stuff, and it certainly has it. Like they made a video of mine 18 plus because I kissed my fiance in it, which was a whole
thing.
That's
bullshit.
Yeah. So like YouTube has, they fixed it, but like it's been a whole thing, and so like, yeah, it has its own problems, and I certainly have a lot of issues with it, but it is certainly not uniquely so.
Wow.
I would say so.
Yeah,
that's wow. It, which is sad to say, because it's not great.
yeah.
So
okay, well, last time we talked about the best thing about transitioning, so let's flip it over, and for you, what has been one of the worst or most difficult parts about transitioning?
Ooh, worst and most difficult parts. I know you were gonna ask this too. I think it has sort of come with, like, I was trying to figure out how to articulate this, but it kind of goes to what we were just talking about, where it's this need to kind of feel like you have to take on everything,
yeah,
and sort of be there for everything, and in this moment right now, you know, it's because, like, I don't know if you feel this, but, like, I am someone who has, of our generation, been out longer than most as a trans person. Like, even people that I think are sort of, like, well-known trans figures have been out way less than I have. And so there's sort of this desire on my part to kind of, like, want to try to help in every single way that I can.
Yeah.
Because of the world that we live in right now, that destroys you and atomizes you. And that has been deeply, deeply mentally draining. And it really sucks to say that, like, you kind of have to like pick and choose your battles at certain points, as we all do. But like at this moment where everything's so dire, that's kind of been hard for me. And I guess that's not really transition related. That's just being trans related.
It's related enough. I mean, I dealt with the same thing. I remember there was a time, it's like a year or two ago, I was started getting a little bit more active on Reddit, and I'm really not anymore because I don't have the time, but I would go to like the different trans subreddits, and there would be all these people whose eggs just cracked or who just came out, and they have all these questions. And I would feel like when that happened to me, I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I had to go through it all myself and figure it all out alone. And I don't want anyone else to have to do that. And so it got to the point where I was feeling like I had to routinely scour it. I had to find those people. I had to help every one of them because they didn't have anyone else, you know, but you can't do that. You can't help every single person. So it's hard. It's really hard.
It's interesting too, with our generation in particular too, because like we are one of the first sort of generations that came right after like the 80s and HIV and a lot of that stuff from like the Reagan era. So like a lot of us, not all of us obviously, but a lot of us like don't have a lot of trans elders.
Yeah,
because a lot of them died,
right?
Because of the horrible time. But yeah, it's like we didn't have that, and so you want to give that in a way
Right.
that you didn't have. And it's just, you can't. Even on my YouTube channel, like, I am lucky enough, and I'm sure you get the same doing this podcast and like working on TV stuff, like you get to affect more than most. You're
Yeah.
like lucky in that way to like, oh, we our work can affect more than just each individual person that we help. It can touch a lot of different lives. But even
Yeah.
within that, you can't know everybody. You can't give that personal time to everybody, and that
Right.
sucks. And you wish it
It
could be there.
does.
It's a weird, make a Star Trek connection. There was a book Brent Spiner wrote, weirdly enough. He's not trans, obviously, but like he was writing in his book about how he'd go to conventions and people would come up to him and like relate to Data, and
Yeah.
he would get so tired because he'd be like, every single time people came up and they want me to like be like, your character meant this thing to me, and he wanted to be there for them. But every like at a certain point when you're like trying to be emotionally present for every single person that comes up to you
Yeah.
just become a non-person because you're just drained.
Because there's nothing left for yourself. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
So I
yeah.
weirdly think about of course I would. I think about Brent Spiner when
Well.
I think about these things. But yeah, I relate to that in as a trans person. It's especially now because it's like I think a lot of trans folks need that connection, and we should find that community. It's part of the beauty of being trans, but it's also you got to make sure you take care of yourself too. So
Absolutely right. All right, and then for one more reminder, just in case there's one person listening who knows me and doesn't know you, where can they find you online after listening?
Main thing is you can find me on YouTube. Just look up Jesse Gender on the YouTubes and you'll find me. I am also on Nebula, the streaming service. I didn't mention last time I have a secondary channel called Jesse Gender After Dark where I do like reviews of stuff like Star Trek. I'll be reviewing Section 31 in a little bit when it comes out. And then I have my own podcast currently called the Jump Gate Podcast, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast, but we'll be changing over to the Frack This Podcast, rewatching the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series. And me and my co-host and I, Vera, do the sort of deep comedic dives into those shows. So yeah, that's everything.
Excellent. Everybody go check those out if you haven't already, but you probably have. Okay. This is going to be a big three-part report because there's so much to talk about. In order to see how things are progressing with time, at the end of part three, I'll compare to my 2022 Trans Rep in Media, that was episode three of the show, and 2023 Trans Rep in Media, episodes 52 to 54 of this show, so you may want to familiarize yourself with those first. Especially as this isn't necessarily movies and television released in 2024, though most of it was, but all of the movies and TV from the last few years that I watched this year. Too much is released for me to see all of it right as it premieres, and the goal is to give you an idea of what one trans woman screenwriter who watches a lot sees in terms of representation in a given year. Also, please realize this means I take notes on every movie and TV show I watch all year, and I've done this every year for 3 years running. It is a huge undertaking, but I think it's an important one. Trans rep in our media has been getting better, but it's still in a dire state, and I think we need to know where it's at if we want to see where and how to make it better. I'm going to be reporting on every time I saw a trans or non-binary person appear, both in terms of characters and actors, because the two don't always match up. As well as any time there were jokes about us or other things about us or related to us that appeared. I want to note that a lot of the jokes are implicit, or society worms implicit transphobia into all of us. See episode 57 on implicit queer phobia for more on how that works. So very often these jokes are implicitly transphobic, meaning that the people working on these shows may not have even intended to target trans people. But when you examine the joke, it all comes down to trans people are different and isn't that hilarious? That doesn't mean the people working on the shows are bad people or bad at their jobs or that the shows are bad. Some shows with implicitly transphobic jokes are shows that I love. It just means the people working on it have some implicit biases that they may not even be aware of and thus haven't worked to change. None of this report is intended as a commentary on the quality of the movie or show mentioned. Art is all subjective. You and even I will have loved or disliked some of these regardless of their trans representation. That is fine and how it works. This is just a report on how trans people are appearing and being talked about in the two most popular mass media formats of our society. Okay? We good? Good. In this age of rampant transphobia, trans rep in media is more important than ever. The good legit helps fight back against the hate we're experiencing. The bad sadly feeds right into it. So it's really, really vital that our art gets trans issues right. If you want to see what happens when it goes wrong, you can see the essay on bad representation, Lovecraft Country, at tillystranstuesdays.com, and Bad Representation 2, Emilia Perez, which was episode 96 just last week. Also, this year, I had a few folks helping out to submit their own reports on things, which I'll get to way at the end after discussing everything I personally watched. Also, I might miss things. I do my best, but I don't have time to look up every single cast and crew member of the mountains of stuff I watch. If them being trans or non-binary isn't called out in the story, I might miss it. But that's part of the point I'm making, because if a trans woman screenwriter looking for that rep misses it, what kind of rep are you actually giving us? Is it even really representation if nobody knows it's there? I'd argue no.
If a trans falls in the woods, does it really make a sound?
I'm also going to call out every time words that explicitly describe men, guys, and dude being the two biggest offenders as applying to people of all genders. That is not transphobic, but it sure is sexist, and it happens so much more than you probably realize. Okay, so let's get into it. And of course, there will be spoilers. It's the only way to talk about some of this stuff. First, I want to say that I only really talk about scripted media in these because quote-unquote unscripted movies and TV shows are entirely different things. Unscripted is in quotes there because even documentaries and, yes, reality TV have writers. But I want to give an honorable mention to the documentary Will and Harper on Netflix, where cishet white man comedian Will Ferrell goes on a road trip across the U.S. with his white trans woman friend Harper Steele. It's by turns hilarious and heartfelt, horrible and heart-wrenching. It's something vitally needed to wake a lot of cis people up, even or especially those who want to call themselves allies, to what trans folks go through in this country. I give it my highest possible recommendation. But as this is a documentary, it won't be counted toward the totals at the end, as I'm chiefly examining our depiction in fiction. I will also note, when there are no trans people or there's no discussion of us or topics related to us, as that is so often the norm. And that's fine, not everything is or should be about us, but it's important to note just how rare it is that we do pop up. Okay, before we dive in, Jesse, I wanted to ask you, was there any trans rep you saw in the past year that really stood out to you?
I mean, we're going to talk about the two big ones.
Okay.
Later on, so I'll say them. The only one that I'll mention that I'm decently sure, I'm just double checking your document here to make sure you didn't. Yeah, the one that I saw just recently that I really liked, even though I have qualifiers on it, was Squid Game Season 2.
Okay, I heard, about what happened with the casting there.
Yeah, the casting is where I have the biggest criticism. There's a lot of complicated stuff with that, which is, like, it's a Korean show. The director and writer said, like, they couldn't find a trans actor in Korea to do it, which, like, I'm not from Korea, so I'm willing to give a little bit of understanding given how conservative it is there and how dangerous it could be for a trans person. That being said, like, they did also cast a cis man.
Right.
For the role, which still perpetuates that, like, oh, we're just men in drag trope. So, like, I have criticisms there. That being said, having watched the show, we just talked last week about Amelia Perez and the bad when these people get things wrong. I would argue that Squid Games is the best possible version of a cis man trying to write about how to teach cis people to understand trans folks that I have seen. Like, it does all of the things that I'm very critical of, like, there's a slight focus on, like, surgeries and, like, the main characters trying to get surgeries. But, like, within the context of Squid Game, which is about debt and everyone going into debt because of different reasons, and as we're seeing with healthcare in the world right now, very clearly, that's a thing that everyone feels. And so, like, it's irrelevant to talk about a trans person within that context, because we feel that even more than most.
Sure.
And then also the show, like, has moments, again, without spoiling too much, where it will directly, like, there's moments where I paused and I'm like, oh God, they're about to do a really transphobic trope, and then I unhit pause, and then they don't do it.
Right.
And I was like, it's a constant reaction to, like, those things. There's, like, an innocuous one. There's a moment where, like, they ask the trans, like, there's women that need to go to the bathroom, and the bad guy's like, you can't use the bathroom. And this old lady who was a little bit, like, questioning of the trans woman character earlier, she's like, oh, is that a man? And she's like, oh, she's with us, she's a woman, she can come. And then, like, I was worried, I'm like, oh, they're gonna go there and there's gonna be, like, some turfy lady in the bathroom,
right?
And there's not. She's just the woman, she's just the trans woman in the bathroom, and just a scene happens that has nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
And there's several of that throughout the show. So while I will say that the show is not necessarily, like, and there's even some more beautiful moments, too, that I really like, where it, like, subverts the barrier gaze trope and everything. So it's, like, it's a lot of not doing the bad thing.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like overpraise it as like some amazing revelatory representation for trans people. However, it is the outside of the casting, which I have criticism of, it is the best possible version of a cis person writing a trans person that I have seen in managing to make our inclusion not fall into tropes, number one, and also be thematically relevant to the story being told while still being limited by like a cis perspective. So that was like, I'm not going to hold it up as like one of the best. We'll talk about that later on because I do have some that I really, really love this year. But that one's when I'm like, yeah, that was good. Good. Pat on the head, cis man. You did good.
So. Excellent. Okay. Onward we go. This episode is about movies. Aquaman 2, 0. Blue Beetle, 0. Canary Black, 0. This movie regularly uses gendered insults on its lady lead, including the C word and calling her a bitch way too many times. At one point, it has her say something to the effect of, "You're not supposed to call women that anymore, especially in the workplace." And then it just keeps on calling her that for the rest of the movie. It's like they wanted to note it just so they could go, "Hee hee hee, we're not supposed to do this, but we're gonna anyway, since we know it's bad and that makes it okay." That is not transphobic, but it is sexist as hell. It was written and directed by cis men, and I'm already very tired. When will women get to make these movies more than hardly ever? Mm-hmm. Damsel, 0. Amelia Perez, 1. Amelia Perez sure is a movie about a Mexican trans woman written and directed by a cis white French man. This one counts as rep in both character and the actor that portrays her. But all rep is not good rep, and this one sure isn't. Again, check out last week's episode for all the info on the damage this movie did. But can we just stop doing this, please? Will you let trans people make movies about trans people? We actually do know ourselves better than cis white men do. I'm also kind of mad because it's going to win awards because it's important and just so brave, and it's going to make things worse for trans women. Just help us tell our stories. Goodness. The Fall Guy, 0. Fly Me to the Moon, 0. In a phone call between two men, one of whom works at NASA and is complaining about having to do things like interviews and allow astronauts to appear in advertisements, he's told by a government official, quote, "She made you the belle of the ball, so put on a tutu and do a little dance." It's a joke, and it's meant to take him down a peg, because a perceived man associated with femininity is always bad, right? Ugh. Furiosa, 0. One cis man uses the phrase, "That'll put our tits in the ringer," which I guess is a joke because cis men generally do not have tits. This is one of those implicit jokes I mentioned. Ha ha, wouldn't it be funny for men to have boobs? And like, hey, some trans men do, and this is laughing at their existence. Stop that. For a while, Furiosa impersonates a boy to hide her identity, but there is no gender stuff going on, and it's definitely not played for laughs, so that was a nothing burger.
I will say I agree with all of your points. I do actually really like Furiosa a lot in terms of some of its gender stuff with like women and how women are viewed in the society in some ways. It doesn't go as deep into it, especially when, again, you say she impersonates a dude and there's never any interrogation of what that means to her.
Right.
So I do think it's limited in it, but I do generally like this movie and a lot of it's sort of like breaking the cycle of violence and anger and sort of like how women are treated within or subjugated within those very patriarchal stories. So yeah, I'd enjoy it on that.
It carried one over those themes from Fury Road really well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, 0. At one point, someone says, quote, "Gozer isn't a he or a she," which means Gozer the Gozerian is non-binary. Gozer was played by 3 people, all of them cis women. Gozer's movements were dancer Emma Portner, their face was Olivia Wilde, and their voice was the stone-cold amazing Shora Agadashlu. Now listen, there's a debate to be had about whether the only non-binary character in the entire movie being a demonic spirit that wants to destroy the world is a good thing. It isn't. But if you're going to make the character non-binary, why did you hire 3 cis women to play them? There are non-binary actors that would have killed for that role. This robs them of a part in a big movie and perpetuates the harmful idea that non-binary people are just quote-unquote women light. Someone also says that Gozer being non-binary is pretty woke for 3000 BC. So that's a joke about Gozer being non-binary. Meanwhile, apparently 0 non-binary or trans people were involved with it. This is technically character rep, 0 actor rep, and 1 joke.
And also it erases the fact that like non-binary people did exist back then in
they
different
did.
contexts
Always
and
have.
different yep in different contexts, different cultural, like different ways, mm-hmm. but did exist. And also it's erasing like the original movie, like, you know, the original movie, I think it was also a gender, like there was gender messed up stuff going on in that. I forget the actor who played Gozer in the original movie.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I believe they in real life presented gender ambiguous as well. Like, I think they didn't have like the language of non-binary
sure.
really popularized back then. But I think that there's something to be said too of like erasing that more like boundary pushing representation in that first movie, and still like the non-binary person who wants to destroy the world thing they're going on
yeah.
there too, but that more boundary pushing like David Bowie-esque sort of rep there versus
yeah.
this being like, oh, we'll cast three cis women, especially someone like Olivia Wilde, who I do like, but is like traditionally like
yeah.
feminine, a sort
it,
of looking
it is
person.
Wild too that you mentioned that, because to think that a sequel to Ghostbusters is in that casting more regressive is wild, because Ghostbusters, like, I love that movie, but it has some
mm-hmm.
really regressive Reagan politics in
it. Oh,
it
very
and
much
so
does.
The fact that you got more regressive in some ways, you know, 30, 40 years later, is that is wow. That's bad news.
Oh, the way it treats women in that first movie, not great either. And again, I
no.
love it, but whoo boy, whoo
yeah,
boy.
Yeah. It's got so many rough spots. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, 0. Godzilla Minus One, 0. I Saw the TV Glow, 2. Bridget Lundy Payne is trans and plays a trans character, and it was written and directed by Jane Schoenbrunn, who is trans. It is chiefly about Owen, who is trans, but is played by cis man Justice Smith. You can hear my 7-part series of episodes all about the intentional trans allegory of I Saw the TV Glow beginning in episode 81 of this podcast. It's magnificent and sacred to me, and some of the good representation we really, really need.
I'm gonna when I hear I know you already did a 7-part series on it. I already
yeah,
did a
yeah.
whole video on it too
yeah.
on my channel, so check it out. Like we could talk for forever about this. But
we could.
I will say one thing about it in comparison to something like Amelia Perez.
Yeah.
Which is Amelia Perez, we talked about last week, is this movie by cis folks trying to like pat themselves on the back. We told a transgender story, and it's this very otherizing transgender tale
yeah.
going in all the trans tropes. And what's interesting to me about I Saw the TV Glow, and it's similar to something that The Matrix does, which is like, yes, it's very clear this is a trans allegory. The
yep.
characters are trans, like you, and the director is also trans. So like, you can't see this thing not inextricably linked to being trans.
Right.
The film never explicitly says trans. It
yeah.
never like explicitly like beats you over the head of like, this is a trans thing. It just has a lot of that allegorical stuff, very visual stuff, like the trans colors and the like
yeah.
character wearing a dress at one point. And what I love about that is it's saying, hey, this pain, this stuff that trans people are feeling, we're all, like, everyone feels it.
Exactly.
And it's this sort of universalizing of the specific experience of being trans. In
yeah.
that, like, again, The Matrix does this really well. A lot of trans stories do this really well when you actually have trans people writing it. When, as opposed to something like Amelia Perez, which is very much like, oh, look at the trans people. Shouldn't we feel bad for them? They're over there, though. They're definitely
right.
over there doing
Absolutely,
their own thing.
Yeah.
We should just look at them to pity them. We're never going to relate to them other than to be like, oh, look how sad. Whereas every trans story is very much like, hey, this is how I feel. This is the pain I feel deeply as a trans person. Don't you, potentially cis person watching this, feel that too?
Yeah.
And it's this much more universalist in the specific message that I think is core to a lot of trans art made by trans people. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things where like the more specific about a community or an experience that you get, the more universal the story becomes, because
mm-hmm.
we all have so much in common that like, you know, you don't know what it's like to be a different gender than the one the world tells you that you are, but you know what it is like to have expectations leveled on you that you feel do not belong to you. You
yep.
can relate to what we go through, and that's the
yep.
beauty of this stuff. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Out 2, 0. At one point, Riley calls her two best friends, who are girls, guys.
It also should be said about Inside Out 2, that was one of the numerous times this year that Disney chose to actively erase queer storylines. I don't know if
oh
you heard
no,
about
I did not know that there was a queer storyline in there.
So it was they wanted the film to be more overtly queer. Like, you can kind of still glean it in Inside Out 2 when you watch it now, where, like, clearly the main character's having some sort of feelings about the older, cooler girl like, there's definitely queerish vibes there, but apparently they wanted to make that a bit more obvious and even potentially explicit, and Disney was like, nope, can't do that. And I think they even replaced some of the people working on it. And that is a trend that got even worse this year.
It sure
if you
did.
Saw with other Pixar stuff.
I remember, too, there's a point in the movie where there's, like, in her mind, there's the Mount Rushmore of crushes or whatever. And I was looking at them like, come on, throw one girl in there. No, they were all dude faces. So,
I would bet for sure there was a girl face, at least a girl face on there that Disney was like, nope, can't do that.
Oh, jackpot. One, trans man Murray Hill, who comes up later in our talk on TV, has a small role. He's only in two scenes, has only a handful of lines, and is never mentioned as trans. But honestly, that's probably for the best, because his character runs a lottery where it's legal for anyone to murder the winner within 24 hours of them winning to get their money. And it'd be real weird to say some bad stuff to lay the blame for that at the feet of trans people. At one point, the lead cis woman character calls a room full of women doing yoga guys. It is so pervasive. Harry Potter gets referenced twice in the same discussion. Ugh. And there's this really complicated moment that seems transphobic, but I think it might not be. So the lead cis woman character, who's won the aforementioned lottery, gets a disguise to hide from all the people trying to kill her for her winnings. And she puts on a mask of an old man, and then says something to the effect of, let's go pee standing up and make more money than our female counterparts. So on the one hand, a woman making a joke about peeing standing up feels like women with penises are hilarious, implicit transphobic joke that you're going to see pop up way too often in this report. But as it's immediately followed up with a joke about how women are underpaid due to sexism, I don't know. I really can't parse this one, so I'm not going to count it as a joke at our expense, but it was weird. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, 0. Lisa Frankenstein, 0. At a couple points, the Frankenstein monster, who is a man, wears women's nightgowns, and you're not going to believe this. It is not played for laughs. There's a lot going on here that makes it a pretty fabulous trans allegory. I'll be doing a deep dive on it before too long, I think, especially as it's one of the few trans mask allegories I've seen. But I'm not yet sure if it was intentional, and I don't think there were any out trans people working on it or making it, so it doesn't count in any categories. Love Lies Bleeding, 0. The Marvels, 0. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning 1, 0. Monkey Man, 1, with an asterisk. This entire movie is a trans allegory and will also probably be getting a deep dive at some point. The character Alpha is important and a hijra. That's the term the movie uses. And I understand there's some who believe the term to be derogatory and others who are reclaiming it. Even though some of them identify as trans women and some might not, I'm going to stick to calling them trans women when talking about them in this film so as to avoid offending someone with a term I do not have the full cultural context to be using. But Alpha is played by cis man Vipin Sharma. Sharma said after meeting the director that, quote, he saw me as somebody just completely the opposite of me. I am a male. He saw me as a female character, which was quite amazing, actually, that he saw something about me that he thought I will be good to play this role. Link in the show notes. And yeah, that's amazing for you, man, but what about all the actual trans women who should have been playing that role? And even here, in a movie with great representation and a really strong trans allegory, it perpetuates the idea that trans women are really just men. Come on. The movie does feature a squad of trans women beating the crap out of a room full of bigoted goons, however, which is a big point in its favor. I should also mention that the movie actually wasn't released in India, even though it has an all-Indian cast and is set there. Thanks to Pragya for that info and the cultural context around the term the movie uses.
And also, too, like, there are some trans women, like, again, cultural context within there in some sequences in the film. They are background. They're not forward center, which is, again, why you have the asterisk, I think. But, like, they are there. So, like, there's at least some sort of casting in there. And then also the film has, like, that whole section that takes place. It's sort of like they have some discussion about how these trans folks are ostracized from Indian society. So, like, there's conversation around it as well. So, yeah, it is very unfortunate that the main casting for the trans character is of cis man, which I think they could have done better on. But, like, there is a desire to be talking about those issues and to relate the main character to them in a trans allegorical way.
I think this is sort of like what you were saying about Squid Game. Like, it is not great on the casting, but what they did with it in the movie was very good.
So, exactly. Agreed. Yeah. Very much so. Yep.
Next goal wins. 1. Jaya is a Fafine, something akin to a trans woman in Samoa, played by Kaimana, who is a trans woman. She is forced to play on the men's soccer team because she hasn't had bottom surgery. Ugh. She's intentionally misgendered and deadnamed by their new cis white man coach until he learns to respect her and comes to see her as kinda like a daughter. At first he says to her, quote, "You're a woman," when he's surprised she's on the men's team, and she says, "Not yet," because she hasn't had gender confirmation surgery yet. Oof, talk about perpetuating more transmedicalism. Mm-hmm. Check episode 60 for more info. As this was based on a real story, it could have gone into how horrible it was that that was probably required at the time, and thus the way that thinking was beat into every trans woman by society. But it doesn't, probably because the story wasn't told by trans people. At one point, she goes off her hormones because she thinks it will help the team and has a scene where she breaks down because without them, she doesn't feel like herself anymore. And that is great, but they don't do anything with it beyond that. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of used to teach the cishet white man about humanity and caring and opening his heart back up, rather than being about how it affects Jaya, who never mentions it again. It is based on a real trans woman and her story, but written and directed by cis men. Link in the show notes about that. This is rep in character, actor, and story, but it is mixed representation at best.
Mm-hmm.
Orion and the Dark, 0. The People's Joker, 2. Ooh. Written and directed by trans woman Vera Drew and also stars Kane Distler, who is also trans, and both play trans characters. There's also a non-binary character in the movie, and I believe there are other trans and non-binary actors mm-hmm. in the cast. But as this was an indie movie, it was tough to find information on some of them, and I do not want to speculate on people's gender, so I'm going to count the rep as 2 actors and 3 characters.
I will say Mia Moore, who is a friend of mine, does have a cameo in the movie, and she is a trans woman and also a trans woman filmmaker.
Yes, I know. I'm aware of her. I do not know her personally, but I did catch her cameo.
Yep, so she's in there, and she's a friend of mine, so she's great. So, and I know there's others as well, but those are the only ones that I know as well. So.
The entire story is about being trans, as told through a parody lens of the Batman mythos, with a helping of Superman mythos tossed in. It's bananas, it's kind of subversive, it's funny, it's wildly creative and original. At several points, it kicked me right in the heart when talking about things trans people go through. It tells its trans story right on the surface, but also, I think it kind of brilliantly uses the world of stand-up comedy as an only half-hidden allegory for gender, and uses that to say even more about what it's like to be trans in this world. Also, I am not really a fan of the Joker as a character, but this movie had me all the way through. The People's Joker is the only Joker for me. Thank you. I found it really great and unforgettable.
This movie is fantastic. Probably my second favorite behind I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah.
In a lot of its stuff. And the end message, again, I don't want to spoil for people who haven't seen it, but it gets at this really anarchistic vision that I think reclaims the Joker in a really interesting way, because the Joker has become the symbol of like toxic masculinity and violence and pain. And the movie kind of discusses that as well through the Jared Leto style Joker that we get, that he was a trans man in the film. But like, what's fascinating to me in particular, and I might do a video on this at some point, and it's a much longer discussion, is putting this in conversation with Joker 2 that came out this year. Because that movie very clearly was also trying to have this deconstruction of the Joker as a character and how the character's been claimed by like the worst, like incel-y kind of toxic masculine people in society. And the movie was, that version was trying to like deconstruct that, but in a way that's like very cis man focused and very antagonistic to its audience. Whereas the People's Joker is doing, I would argue, like a similar deconstructionist idea, but in a way that like really addresses like, this is how the Joker's been used, but this is how the Joker actually should be seen, in this very anarchistic kind of like, actually let's build a better society kind of way, as opposed to sort of like vilifying anarchism or vilifying these sort of more egalitarian movements that you often see the Joker used for, in particular in Christopher Nolan's films. Like, his use of Joker in The Dark Knight is very much like, I am scared of society and people who want to tear down the status quo and change things and norms for the better. Like, Christopher Nolan has, like, expressly talked about how he's scared of anarchy. And when I say anarchy for listeners, like, as a political ideal, as, like, creating egalitarian society that's confrontational to hierarchical things, not like chaos in the streets, which is what many people think anarchy is and is portrayed as often through people like the Joker and the Dark Knight. So, yeah. So anyways, I could rant about this movie for forever, but like, I think that this is not only like such a great trans allegory and using comedy, but it has such a great conversation with the character of the Joker specifically, yeah, in ways that like cis people this very same year tried to do and did it much worse.
Yeah. Imagine so, that.
Yeah. What a shock. So.
Yeah. I will also add that it was really hard to see for a while since it's an indie film, and I had to order a copy on Blu-ray, but I found out right before we recorded this, like a day or two ago, that you can now rent it from like Apple TV and I think Amazon for like $5. So it's much more accessible to everybody now.
Yeah. It's on Mubi, which is the same place that did like The Substance this year.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah.
Like, it's kind of cool that it's getting like, I don't know. I don't necessarily know if you would call Mubi mainstream attention, but it is getting like some level of institutional attention, which is, you know,
it's
not
getting access to a wider audience finally. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Red 1-0. There's a quote unquote Christmas witch who possesses a man to speak through him, and she and her sons are all shapeshifters, and one of them impersonates two different women. Nothing trans is done with it, but zero jokes are made about it either, which feels like dodging a bullet. I'll take it. Robot Dreams, 0. The Substance, 0. So I think you can definitely read some trans themes into this, but I'm not even going to try it right now because it would take me an awful long time to figure out, and I'd have to watch it multiple more times, and I don't think I could handle that. It's a lot. That movie is a lot.
I won't take too much time on this one, but like, I have feelings on The Substance. I like it. I agree. There's definitely some trans stuff in there, especially like the there's a person inside of you thing.
Right.
Both you. That like would be weird to deconstruct. I don't know. I have weird feelings on this movie too, because everyone's really loving it, and it does sort of get at like how women are told to view themselves and sort of like treat themselves in a very patriarchal world. But also it does it in a very essentializing way, in a way that I don't think it's reacting to, rather than trying to create something new. It's just a deconstruction, which I don't think is as, it's not really offering anything more to say other than like, hey, women are treated badly and kind of get that in their brain. It's like stylistic and got a lot of things going on, but I don't necessarily know how deep it really is in what it's saying. And also should be mentioned, while his character, the actor is appropriate for the character he's playing, it is weird to be casting Dennis Quaid in today's day and age, considering his views on the world.
And be aware for folks, if you've not heard about it or seen anything, it is a very intense body horror. So
yes,
just
intense.
Be prepared for that, because there are some images that will never leave my mind. Okay.
As someone who loves body horror, and I'm a David Cronenberg freak, I loved it. So if you're a body horror fan, go for it. But yeah, it's also not for the timid on those subjects.
It is intense. That movie went camping. It's intense. Okay. Yeah, bad jokes. All right.
I will take it. I love it.
Transformers 1-0. So this is wild, but the whole movie is about autonomy and people who have choice removed from them at birth without consent. So it's super trans conceptually. And I've always felt that Transformers the movie, the only other animated Transformers movie from 1984, was also a huge trans allegory. And I guess maybe that just happens when transform is literally in the title. But this one seemed even more intentionally trans to me. Still, no actual rep that I'm aware of, though.
It is like the, you're a robot in disguise. Like, there's been some good comics that have made like the queer stuff of Transformers really kind of cool.
And there's
fun.
Trans rep in those comics, I've heard too.
One of my favorite, one of my best friends, she has this bit, she's a comedian, and she's also hyperfixates on Transformers too. She has this very funny bit where it's like, a lot of boys were watching, it's like, there can only be boy Transformers. So when a comic book artist created like one of the trans, made a woman robot character, Transformers character, they're like, well, no, there's only boys, and the only boys can be Transformers. And then the creator's like, oh, so you're saying only boys can be Transformers? Well, then that means they must get together then, right? And just starts like the getting them together. It's like, no, not like that, please, no. So yeah, that's very funny. But yeah, this movie, I like Transformers 1. The only thing that I didn't like about it was it does the thing that Marvel movies do a lot sometimes too, which is there's the character that is fighting the status quo goes too far and needs to becomes the actual villain sort of thing. Like, it's a thing that a lot of like Marvel-y kind of movies do, where it's like, look, there's a good and a bad way to fight the status quo, and you, extremely radical person who has very good points, you're going about it too far. So you need to stop that. So like,
yeah, I remember kind of that definitely happened with like Killmonger in the first Black Panther. You're like, no, he's got a lot of good points. Mm-hmm. We should listen to Killmonger.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier also did that too. The TV show was like the Flag Smashers, where it was like, hey, this person who's talking about how refugees are being treated and mistreated and actually fighting back, and the only person standing up for them and no other characters making that point. Like, yeah, those are all very good points. But, you know, she also wants to indiscriminately bomb innocent people for no real reason, so we can make her look like a villain. And really, the best way to get change to happen is just to finger wag your finger at a senator and say, do better, senator. That'll definitely get them to change.
So. Well, that wraps up the recently released movies that I saw in 2024. Thank you for being here, Jesse.
Yay, thank you for having me.
Come back next week as we begin our deep dive into trans rep in TV. Tilly Bridges and Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, and you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening. Wow. What was I even saying? Okay.
I don't know what you're saying here.